Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Cindy DeFerdinand, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Cindy DeFerdinand.
Hi, everybody.
All right. Hello, hello. So, Cindy and I have been talking about coaching techniques, and one of the things that comes up all the time is the issue of boundaries and what those look like in the context of life coaching or executive coaching. And and I think that's good to know, because I think that's a challenge for everybody that is working with people, knowing where they end and something else begins. So Cindy, what's your take on the role of boundaries?
Well, I think with boundaries, I think it's being clear. You know, less is more sometimes. You know, that we don't need to give somebody a lengthy explanation, but if we're really kind of that neutral posture where there's not a lot of emotion in it, if it's something you've been putting off for a long time and it's with somebody that you have to make a serious change or set a serious boundary with, I think asking them to sit down, I think having eye contact with somebody, and I think also having a scripted answer so that you feel comfortable with what you have to say to the person. Typically, there can be emotion involved. And I think one of the benefits of working with your coach, whether it's your business coach, your personal development life coach, if you will, is that you have an opportunity to bring up scenarios in which you have uncomfortability and work with a coach to script, to practice, to look at options, because there are options when you set boundaries. It doesn't have to be black and white. There can be options involved. I work on boundaries a lot with my clients. I had a business startup client today. We were working on it. I had a client who's in a difficult situation relationship-wise, which is we've been working on scripting this conversation she needs to have, which will play out options to her partner, but a very tough decision to make. And I think the more practiced you are, instead of having, you know, sort of ideas swirling in your head and options and second guessing yourself, working with a coach can help you get very clear. So I think it's important. Clear communication is very important.
What are some of the things, you know, you're talking about working with a client and helping them develop boundaries, assert a boundary, and maintain boundaries? Is that what you're
I think that probably if I had a pick of the three things you just said, I would say assert boundaries. You know, some people don't know how to effectively communicate clearly when they're drawing a line in the sand. They may bring it up, you know, continually in sort of a negative, defensive, repetitive even manner, but nothing gets done because it often turns into a disagreement. There's no resolution. A boundary is drawing a line in the sand to take care of yourself and to clearly communicate what you need, what you're asking for, and what the options are, or consequences, if you will. Boundary isn't necessarily a threat or an ultimatum, but it can, I think it can push up against that. But if you do it really clearly, and really and from a neutral position, take the emotion out of it, maybe look at it as a business decision. I always tell my clients that, put your business hat on when you have this conversation. I think it gets a lot easier. But what happens most of the time is people circle around an issue. Either they never bring it up, or they're passive aggressive with it, whether it's an employment, a personal relationship, maybe an intimate relationship. They don't really sit down and get clear. Less is more, right? I know they have a saying, you know, they have a saying, I think in the Al-Anon program, 10 words or less, you know, be very clear. And I think people know when you're serious, you know, when you're finally down to getting serious instead of, you know, wanting to just discuss it or argue about it. It enables you to show the other person what you need, what you will put up with, what you won't, what will happen if you don't get what you need, and it puts it on the person you're having the conversation with instead of them being able to divert it back to you.
I think that's really good. So, like you said, to assert that boundary is a pretty dangerous or vulnerable place for people, right?
Yes.
And so you were saying about having a scripted response, and that way the person could articulate clearly what that is and get that out and not be taken in the moment or somehow break
right.
weak or be distracted or whatever. So I think...
Well, or get into it. Like sometimes when you need to set a boundary, it can be a volatile situation, meaning emotionally volatile, right? Maybe it's a parent. They've been treating you and saying the same things to you for so long, and they've been intruding in your life in some way, or over-parenting if you're an adult, and you need to get clear with them and have a clear conversation. Maybe you've been defensive. Maybe you've been argumentative. Maybe you've ignored them. But now you're going to have that, you know, honest conversation with somebody. And, you know, the interesting thing, and I'm sure you have the same experience, Bruce, that when somebody needs to set a boundary and they work with somebody professionally to work on that, and they actually script it, practice it, get comfortable with it, really know that this is what needs to happen, all those fears about what the other person's going to do, because a lot of times people don't set boundaries because they think, you know, they're going to lose someone, or somebody's going to be mad at them, or, you know, there's this expectation on them from a responsibility standpoint. They don't set the boundary because of those reasons. But it's so wonderfully interesting to see that when you finally set a boundary, how well received it is. Most of the time, people will respect it. The only people I think that may have an issue with respecting boundaries is if they have absolutely none of their own. You know, they're a little tougher. You got to draw the line, you know, maybe a little deeper with people like that. There are people who don't understand boundaries at all.
Right. And, you know, the timing aspect of it is, I don't know if you've ever worked with people and as a coach, you know, you're thinking, man, this person needs to draw a boundary. Wow, this person needs mm-hmm. to draw a boundary. And there's that reluctance. And then, boy, if that just goes unfettered sometimes, right, the person can get consumed by the other person or this negative situation. So how do you balance being a coach and being not directive, but every bell and whistle in your brain is saying, get the F out of this deal or whatever.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Well, but yeah, you know, how do you balance that? Go ahead.
Well, I think that's a really great question, because I think that's typically the assumption when you go to somebody for support, for somebody to partner with and walking through a difficult situation, relationship, job, you know, where you definitely need to get some clear communication going and draw that line in the sand or let your needs be really clear, is that you think the person who's going to facilitate this process is going to tell you what to do. But interestingly enough, that's where the coach has to self-check. They have to check themselves. I have to check myself. I may think I know the answer, but that's my answer based on my experience. It's all about the client. So you continue to ask. One of the things I ask so many times is, what are your options? If somebody brings up a difficult relationship situation and they feel like it's time to do something or change the behavior. Maybe it isn't even set a boundary. Maybe it's something entirely different. But if it is a boundary, I don't want to talk about this, you know, or, you know, whatever, then they're going to have to get to that decision. So my coaching skill set and how I was taught to coach is, you keep asking probing questions until they come up with the answer. Because you could tell somebody, you need to get out of this relationship, it's abusive, you need to set a boundary, you need to give an ultimatum, and by the way, you better be prepared to keep it if you set an ultimatum. You know, it's easy to say those things, but if I say those things to a client who is just broaching the subject, just starting to, you know, put their big toe in the water and get comfortable with it, I'm going to have way more success. May take more time than the client would like. Maybe it'll take a couple, two or three sessions, but I'll have way more success if I probe and ask questions so they get to the point where they want to have this conversation. They want to set this boundary. And then I'm there to partner with them in terms of how do you say it? What are some of your options in terms of scripting that conversation and thinking through the outcome? Because if somebody's going to set a boundary, most of the time they're very, very nervous about what's going to happen when they set that boundary. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. What are some of the other probing questions that you use in addition to what are your options? What are some of the things that you've used to elucidate? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I have to sometimes use scaling questions to determine how confident they are, how prepared, how ready they are to move forward. So, you know, if they're talking about they need to have this conversation or they have this situation in their life that they've been putting up with, I usually start talking about what they're putting up with, you know, and that level of frustration and resentment that is building to the point where they know it's time to do something. And then, of course, what are your options? And on a scale of 1 to 10, how prepared, how comfortable are you with doing it? Because sometimes they're not ready yet. Sometimes they're ready to pull the trigger, create the script and move forward. But sometimes it may take them a little bit of time to get comfortable with it, then go home in between sessions and take the time to feel if it's right, if they're ready to move forward, and then come back in and start talking to me about that actual conversation and what situation they're faced with in terms of how to script that out. And even create options for the person they're setting boundaries with. Sometimes that's part of a boundary setting session. So I think it's just asking questions until the person is ready. It's like almost, I don't mean like you're pulling them along, because it's really not pulling somebody along. It's just being fully present to be compassionately empathetic to what they're going through and not rush the process. I try not to rush the process, but yeah, it can be much clearer to me, or you probably know as well, it can be very clear to you that something needs to change and it needs to change now. But I think just giving somebody the leeway to get there themselves, I'm always surprised how fast they do it. They're not working with a coach unless they want movement. They don't even show up in your office if they don't want movement forward. So most of the time, just allowing them to empty out, allowing them to feel it, to get comfortable with it, I think it's a respectful thing to do.
Yeah, I think that's a really good approach, you know, and that's the thing about you, Cindy, is that you're really patient, and you'll kind of lay back in the foreground a little bit. And like you said, ask those questions until the person comes up. Now, I'm not so patient. So what I do is I kind of, what I have done in these things, and you're probably going to disagree, but what I've done is taken a page from some of the resiliency work and basically do some exercises. And so one of the exercises is, you know, get, you know, listing the worst case scenario. It's kind of three prongs. So in other words, if you set this boundary, what's the worst case scenario? And I mean, I want to hear it all. I want to hear the world is going to end. You know, my genitals are going to drop off, whatever it is. I mean, right. Something just horrific, you know.
I mean, homeless,
everything, rejection and fears. And so here's that. So the worst case scenario, list. Then I want to hear the best case scenario, but it's almost as much as a caricature as well. I mean, it's realistic, but it's caricature, right? Like, oh yeah. You know, they'll get it. I'll live happily ever after. They'll, you know what I mean? Whatever the best case scenario.
You're looking at, you're asking, right. what's the possible outcomes,
right.
From best
and then,
to worst.
And then, and you go through all that. And then lastly is what's in the middle. What do you think's in between these two things? It's more of an academic approach. We've had the worst side and to the very, very worst. We've had the unicorns and rainbows and glitter poop and the best and the very, very best.
Right.
And so then we kind of go into the middle, and the middle is actually where reality is for a lot of people, right? It's going to be give and take. You know what I mean? There's going to be some stuff in the middle. And so a lot of times when people have been kind of put through this exercise, and this isn't just for asserting a boundary, right? It could be for some sort of fear or dread or doom or a self-confidence issue. I know that you, Cindy, you work with a lot of folks that are, you know, business startups, and obviously, right, they're like, I'm so scared my business is going to fail. I'm going through, you know what I mean?
Well, they cycle through doubt and fear. Yeah.
Right. And we all do.
Second guessing is a big thing I deal with. Yeah.
Right. So that for me, sometimes those exercises are a little bit more kinetic, and you know, I like running off the sides. You know what I mean? Because you know me, I'm kind of an in-your-face person. It's probably not the best thing for me to be a coach. But anyway, but I have this kind of...
It's your style. But
yeah,
you also,
overly engaged, yeah, style.
Yeah, but sometimes, you know, in the executive coaching you're doing, when, you know, there may be a problem situation, you know, you're wanting to get them to resolution. I mean, generally you work for, you know, 6 months with somebody. I mean, it's like there's a time period where the company is wanting a positive response, a positive outcome. So I think the sense of urgency may be a little bit heightened. And maybe that's, you know, why you feel that urge to kind of push them up to the edge a little bit more, which is fine. I think, you know, sometimes it's the time is now. But I think what I was trying to say is, like, I really prefer for the client to be ready to you know, be the one coming up with the idea. How we script it, how we do it, may be a different thing. But I think the fear factor and why people put it off, it's so bizarre how people put off setting even minute boundaries. And it's really because they just have never done it. They're not very practiced at it. It's amazing how easy it is once you start doing it. So for point of this show today, and the reason we're bringing it up is, we come up against it, and you have a different approach than I may in terms of coaching somebody through it. But you can bet everybody listening today, everybody I have ever worked with in my practice, and I'm sure in yours, is pushed up against boundaries at some point. And a lot of people are not very practiced at it. So my job as a coach is to partner with them to get more comfortable. And once they do, boom, the shifts can really happen. It's a lot easier than you think. Just being clear with what you want,
right? And I at the core of this, Cindy, I think is a sense of fear. I mean, this is what it is.
Yeah.
It's raw fear, and that's why there's an inability or a blockade or a reluctance to set the boundary, because there is fear associated with doing that.
Right. It's definitely uncomfortable. I mean, even if you're seasoned practiced at setting boundaries, they're not always comfortable conversations, but you have to in life get comfortable with the uncomfortable. Once you're able to do that and you see that the sky doesn't fall, the person doesn't eliminate you out of their life, and the clearer and more comfortable and confident you are, and calm, you know, it's just like bringing that sense of calm. This conversation needs to happen. This is how it's going to play. I've scripted it. I've practiced it. I'm taking my emotion out of it. I'm not showing up defensive, angry. I'm not pointing my finger at somebody. I'm clearly stating the boundary. It's really quite a beautiful thing. I love the boundary thing. I absolutely love watching the growth in people once they start taking care of themselves and put themselves first and set boundaries and find how amazingly easy it can be. Most of the time, if you're dealing with a rational person, they will accept the boundary, and the bonus is respect you for it.
Right, and it's absolutely essential for their own health and their own growth.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's...
You can stay stuck in a really bad situation for way too long simply because you don't have your voice in terms of setting a boundary, and you don't know that it can be done very simply, very calmly. A lot of times people, and I don't know if you find this, but what I find with clients is that, you know, they take on too much in terms of others' opinions, others' responsibilities. They just take on too much, and when they break it apart, when we pull it apart in terms of the coaching sessions, they start seeing clearly what's theirs and what isn't. Sort of that detachment process where you sort of, you have a, you know, kind of stay in your circle. Don't own the other circle, just yours. The boundary is about the other person or, you know, owning their part. But I think when people have boundary issues, they try to own both parts. And the simplest thing is maybe they were never taught. They didn't have an example or a representation of it in their family of origin. Maybe they weren't taught boundaries. That could be one of the reasons why they have a difficult time setting them.
Have you had this come up more in male or female clients?
That's a super good question. I don't know that it'd be more. I think probably more in female. Yeah, I would have to say a little bit more in female conversations. We could have a whole really humorous day about that, just the differences. I think there is, and correct me if I'm wrong, with men, they're more linear and they're more cut to the chase. And most of the time, not all, because I do have some men who have a really hard time with emotionally vaulted situations, but I find with men, they have that I don't give a shit factor. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's like, I don't care that enough. You know, there's that where women care deeply about so many things, and where a man may just, you know, check it off their list and not even consider it a boundary issue. That's what I experience more, is they're just a little bit more linear and have that ability to just kind of cut to the chase a little bit more of what's important and what isn't worth their time.
Yeah, I think in some of my work with the executives, I've had to teach them how to honor people's boundaries.
There you go. That's good.
And not violate other people's boundaries. It's kind of reverse.
So let's dive a little bit into that, because that's a great topic for the executive, like the sort of executive roles, the C-suite, if you will. Those types of personalities can be a little bit dicey, right? I mean, you can draw into a little bit of the narcissistic, right? They are in a position of power. They're in a position to make decisions, and sometimes they don't consider how that plays out to the people they're working with underneath them.
Exactly. So, in other words, you know, you're the visionary. I'm working with a guy now, and he's like, I'm the visionary, I'm the secret sauce, I'm the one that, I'm the reason for the season, all this and that, and yet he's pretty much alienated the people underneath him that would be the people that would effectuate his vision, right?
Right, exactly.
So he has this vision and mission, and he's going to drive business through these channels and all this and that, right? Well, hey, guess what? You know, unless, you know, you can't do that on your own, basically, you know, mm-hmm. in that executive space, there really isn't room for this lone ranger that there is in thought and in principle. But at the end of the day, right, multiple people, scores of people are going to have to be working in concert to get that done. So there's one of those crossroads in the executive coaching, you know, sphere where there's this disconnect between.
Well, it plays just in a different direction. They may be okay with setting their own boundaries, or they're very forceful at it, but they're not very cognizant of other people's boundaries and feelings, because it's all about what they want.
Well, yeah, and it's about rank and rank and power. You know what I mean? I mean, it's I'm sorry. What was your name again? Oh, Cindy. And I'm sorry. How long have you been with the company? Oh, and what department? You know what I mean? It's like, well, listen, little Cindy. I'm not saying, you know what I mean. It's not
right,
that,
right.
That's kind of mean.
But to be taught too. I mean, it's a matter of them being taught or practiced in, you know, pointing it out that if you are not empathetic and supportive in terms specifically in your communication style and how you relate to people, you're going to have a really hard time in a leadership role in a company, because what happens is the strongest people will bail the first, and you will lose your best creative force in your employee base because those people won't stand for it. So what you'll end up with is kind of the leftovers of people who just won't take a risk and make a move and will put up with something. So it's definitely not effective. I know, I'm working in the business world. Effective communication, empathetic, effective communication is so important if you have a leadership role. People have to like you to want to work with you and see your vision. So you definitely want partnership with your, and you want to empower your employee base, not run them over. Nobody likes to be run over.
Well, right. And that's why that 360 evaluation is so important, because I'm taking data points from not only the person, but the person's possible boss. And also two or three, I always make sure I interview thoroughly two or three subordinates and to collect all those data points, right? Because that's really important to hear how others see your client.
Right. Well, it's really important not only for you as a coach in an executive coaching situation. It is valuable to get that 360 so you can get to know your client better and perceive your client better. Interestingly enough, that information is even more important to the client, to the executive who's in a leadership role. And how many executives who have that sort of power driven, I'm the force, you said, I liked what you said, I'm the secret sauce, my way or the highway kind of a management style, how often do they actually seek out perception of their key players or even care what that is? See, that's the problem. If they don't even care what the perception is, I mean, you've probably heard this before. I know from my experience in the corporate executive roles, it takes about a couple of years to cycle out somebody who's ineffective at the top. But a lot of people leave up front. A lot of people will take a few months to think about it and leave. So what happens when you have that type of personality who does not understand boundaries? It's my way or the highway. They're really not in touch with other people. Then it's you really can jeopardize the entire company, because a lot of your key players may exit or just be in a really negative, it starts creating a very negative employment situation across the board. But how many times have you heard of people finally, they eliminate the CEO or the executive, and then they're looking around on their exit saying, what was I doing wrong? Asking way, way too late, instead of going in into a role and getting feedback right up front, asking people, how am I doing? What could I change? And I think a lot of times people just don't think about that. They think about what they want to change. They think about the growth and the profits they want to make. They think about this is how I see it. And they don't take into consideration how people are perceiving their role and their management style, or even maybe it's all one way to them and their way isn't even right. I mean, I've had new leadership come in and want to do things that they didn't understand the business or the customers. And I knew it was going to sink the ship if they kept on.
Well, also, you have to be moving. Your paradigm has to be moving. Your relationships have to be moving. So,
it has to be fluid.
Well, yeah, but I mean, and when we're talking C-suite here, I mean, we're talking something that can grow exponentially really quick. So, for instance, I'm the executive. I come into the company. Now, all of a sudden, I've grown this company, okay? I've grown this company 25%. Now, once you start something, okay, once you start something, the expectation is growth, period.
Right.
Make no mistakes about it. So you've got to be earning. You've got to be producing. There's metrics that need to be met, because that's how people get reimbursed, right? That's how bonuses get formed. That's what helps with stock. That's the reason for the season in these deals, right? And so once you're on this I don't want to say a regression line, but, you know, that's pointed at 45 degree. Yeah. Well, it's kind of going up. You're going to have to make changes to systemically and in your relationships, not only with your clients, let's say, but also your staff, right? And so you're really having to be better and even better and even more better, not only in terms, you know, of you, but now how you run your human resources, how you treat your other staff, how you treat your other C-suite people, on and on and on down the road. So what happens is, you know, I've worked with guys, they were good with where they were at in a smaller frame, but now this frame is global, right? Now this frame is, you know, larger, and you're playing checkers and everybody else now is playing chess.
Right.
Know what I mean?
Well, it's always moving. It's fluid. I, you know, as you were talking, Bruce, I was thinking about some of the conversations we've had in terms of taking, you know, training into executives and into leadership, and, you know, sort of teaching the coaching skill set as a vehicle for enhancing communication, understanding boundaries, recognizing when somebody is trying to set a boundary with you, and just slowing down long enough to recognize that, and the coaching model of asking questions from my perspective, can work on an individual basis. It can work on a group basis. It can work in a professional setting or a personal setting. People do not have to be certified as life coaches and be coaches to practice the skills. And so, you know, this is just an area where this stuff could actually be exposed and taught and simplified. And I really have always believed that the area of either recognizing or setting your own boundaries is very unfamiliar to a lot of people. It's a concept that they've never really been exposed to. They've never practiced. They were never taught. They never witnessed. And so you might have this CEO, this executive, not even really realize he's not acknowledging boundaries, and maybe even be well-meaning and well-intentioned, but just not have the skill set or have been exposed to it. Whereas if they were, they would recognize it, they would become better at it. I'm a big believer in that.
Right. Some of the executive cases I've taken is where the executive was sending texts or interacting with people in the business, and he was crossing a personal boundary, you know?
Right.
Not necessarily that you're plug and chug, sexual harassment, hey, baby, let's hook, nothing like that. But even stuff like, wish you were here, here's what I'm doing. And boy, there's this huge array of gray area, and it gets nasty, and it can be very detrimental. Let me depart 1 second. We've talked about, you know, our coaching clients and them asserting boundaries, but maybe let's talk about the boundaries of the coach. You know what I mean? And coaching, you know, coaching's not like psychotherapy, or coaching's not like being a psychologist or a licensed person, you know, because in those disciplines, right, you're really not supposed to, you know, you can't have coffee with a client. You can't be seen,
right?
Really,
you can't have a personal
in a restaurant. Yeah, you can't have that personal relationship. That's an absolute breach of the ethical code of that particular license. It promotes what's called a dual role relationship, you know, mm-hmm. and yet that way you're not able to deliver a service of clarity and objectivity to your client.
Right.
If you're in some sort of a relationship with that person. So you're not supposed to do that with your clients. But with coaching, it's a lot of, you know, I remember I was invited to a function for a company who had some of my coaching clients there. And hey, it's going to be a barbecue, and we're going to shoot guns, and we're going to do this and that. And I was like, I don't even know if I should be there. And I have a mentor, another mentor, that he says, look, if the company tells you to be there, you be there. You know what I mean? If the company's paying your coaching, you know, right. which they are, then
if
you
they
need
think
to,
it's appropriate.
Right.
Yeah.
If the company says, and you're the paid coach on the engagement, we need you there at the gun club, you're at the gun club. You know, I'm like, okay. So it was really an interesting transition for me to make in seeing that with these executive coaching.
Well, I think
cases.
It's important to point out that, you know, by the International Coaching Federation, the ICF, there is a code of ethics related to anybody who's certified as a coach, as a life coach. I think definitely they rub up against more ethical a little bit more than the tighter regulations of a counselor or a psychotherapist or therapist. There is a code of ethics, but because we're not regulated by the state or licensed, definitely a lot looser in terms of being friends with your clients. You know, it is recommended that you don't coach family and close friends. You know too much. You're already invested in the relationship. But there is a lot more, I think, leeway in terms of coaching people who then become friends or, you know, there's not as much, there's not the reporting, there's just a lot of differences in terms of how you're regulated. Although there is a code of ethics, certainly there is. Yeah.
And there is a code of ethics, and it is kind of new ground. It's new pioneer ground.
It is
amazing because in my practice here on some of the individuals, sometimes I've given them the choice. You know, well, do you want to see me as a counselor and look at your issues in this frame?
Right.
Or would you like me to work with you as a life coach and see him in this frame?
Right, and you spell out the differences.
Boy.
And I know in our agreements, you know, that we set up for coaching, you know, we are always really clear because, you know, some people come in with preconceived notions about what a coach is, or maybe they line it up to an advisor or mentor, and so it's important to explain what a coach is. And, you know, when you were talking a little bit about how do the boundaries apply to the coach in a coaching situation, one of the things that popped for me, you know, not from a regulatory or an ethical standpoint, was how do I check myself and set boundaries within my own practice in each session so that I stay true to the coaching model. To me, that's the boundary that I have to check and recheck all the time. And one of the things I do, and I know you and I have chatted about this before, and I had a coaching session this morning, which was unbelievable in this regard. I am very intuitive, so I have to check that side of me. And how I do that is I determine from my experience as a coach, if somebody is a new client emptying out, I try to refrain from that as much as I can so I can let them go where they need to go, right? Not where I feel they're going or need to be. If it's somebody that I've worked with a little bit longer, what I do when I get a straight intuitive impression is ask permission to deliver the information. So asking permission to take a coaching hat off, put a consulting hat on, or, you know, because I'm a clinical nutritionist, I may be doing business startup coaching. They may want to ask me a question. That's different. I have to let them know now I'm in, you know, consulting mode. But I had a situation today which I asked permission because it's somebody that I've coached for a while and I know very well in a business startup situation. And I was like, oh. But the impression was so strong, I asked permission. And we couldn't believe it because it was exactly what she came up with after our last session, what she had been working on all week long and couldn't wait to share with me. It was the exact same thing that I had the impression on. And we laughed so hard over that. She's like, I can't believe that you came up with the same thing I did. But she came up with it first. It was really, really cool.
But how did you frame that out? Like, walk us through that a little bit. Like, hey, do you mind if I share with you
something I'm feeling?
Go ahead. Yeah. How's
so
that work?
We're like, you know, I asked what's the best use of our time today and what do you want to work on? And so she lined up what she wanted to work on. And we got through about half of that. And then she went to the business and she's, you know, discussing a business startup and a prototype and this and that. And And she brings up somebody she's going to meet with, and then I got the impression that this was the way the product should go. It was like she was taking the product in one direction, and then I got this impression like, oh my gosh, this is the direction you should go in. And I said, can I interrupt you and give you an impression of what I just had an intuitive thought. And when I did, she said, oh my, I can't believe it, because that's exactly what she had already come up with herself and had been working on all week. So it just kind of cemented that, you know, sometimes you work with clients and you know you're meant to be working with them. The two of you together are just the right ingredients for a perfect recipe and outcome. And so it's sort of encouraging when you get to know somebody really well and they respect your coaching, but they also respect you as a business professional or somebody that knows them well enough to speak up. So I just ask, I just say, can I interrupt to give you an intuitive impression I had that was pretty strong? And then, you know, it's up to them. You know, they may want to continue talking and you may not really care what I have, just, you know, my input, because that's not really a coaching posture, right? And or they may say, no, I really want to know. And sometimes it's really fun.
Yeah. I just love that. How would you like to spend our time today? And even that, can I interrupt you? I had this intuitive thought. Can you know those questions are so good and they're so powerful. You know what I mean? I think people underestimate, and they just come off your tongue so smooth. I mean, it's just like second nature for you. I just love your delivery on those things. You know what I mean?
Well, those are
standards. Yeah, they're standards. I just like hearing them from you. It's kind of cool.
You're just kind of
a master at that. You know,
I think anyway. Because you often hear me asking certain questions, and you know when I teach a course for life coach certification, I always tell the students, you know, collect your own. There's so many good questions from an opening, you know, first session to the close session to, you know, the end of the time you're working with somebody. There's such powerful, probing, open-ended questions. Make a list of your favorites, because I think they start becoming a little second nature, you know, and I think it's, you know, you can set a contract with what's important to cover, what's the biggest win for this session. You can do that every session you have. But as you, maybe you're, you know, you've made a commitment or they've made a commitment to you to work with you for 90 days or 6 months, and maybe you're coming to a close, and maybe they're going to go to twice a month now because they've grown past the weekly sessions. I mean, I think it's really important for them to be working on what they think is most critical, and because it's all about the client.
Yeah, I think you're right. And one of the things I want to bring up is another form of coaching. And I wouldn't call it life coaching. I surely wouldn't call it executive coaching, but it is kind of contiguous to what we're doing. And it's something, the whole notion of sober coaching, not recovery coaching, because recovery coaching does kind of look like life coaching, because there is that kind of outpatient or office visit element to it. But that, boy, that sober coaching thing, you know, where you're, you know, like in Hollywood, right? You know, Owen Wilson and Matthew Perry, they've gone on record. It's out in the public sphere how they've had people and coaches literally move in with them, literally move into their house and talk about a close range. I mean, there's still boundaries and limits and stuff like that. But again, in a sober coaching paradigm, you're keeping the person sober. And that is a little bit more directive.
Like more immediate. Somebody who's new to sobriety and recovery. Right. And they sort of have that person that is that they're accountable to, and that's accountable to them. You know, when I look at the coaching model, whether you use it in the executive world and, you know, maybe recovery or sobriety, life coaching, personal development, business, whatever, all the different specialty. I mean, there's so many ways for a coach to go, grief, transition. I think whoever you're dealing with in whatever life situation they find themselves, whatever they're there to get from you and to work through with you, the coaching model stays true. So beyond somebody moving in with a newly sober person, say somebody is 2 years sober, 3 years sober, whatever, they've been through a recovery center, they've done the deal. For me, the benefit of them working with a coach is to build their life, to move forward, to develop coping skills, develop life skills, to take it beyond the paradigm of sponsorship and into more taking their life forward in any way that they want to build a better life, which then you have a better shot. You're living the life you want to live. You got a much better shot at long-term sobriety. So I see the coaching model and skill set being brought to the client where they are, where they're at in any situation. It'll work. And much quicker sometimes than some of the other modalities.
Yeah, yeah. And just having that close range and daily, you know, the person's there. It's just like the session that coaching session that lasts for 12 hours, you know what I mean? If you're sitting there at close range, and the whole idea with the whole sober coaching in that respect is, you know, in the entertainment industry, you want to have a safe set and you can't have people show up to work intoxicated.
They need the support initially. Yeah. They need a little bit more support and accountability.
Right.
And maybe they have a lot on the line, you know? But I think in terms of setting
boundaries in
coaching, I really think that it's our responsibility as a coach to stay within the paradigm of coaching stay true to the coaching.
Absolutely.
So you know, that's the whole point of why people get certified and get educated and go to trainings and get further accreditation, because the more you study and practice it, the better you get at it. And it is a boundary setting within yourself to check, am I in coaching posture throughout the entire session and relationship with the client? It doesn't mean you never give an opinion. They may ask you, and it may be appropriate sometimes, but not, that should not be the norm, as we know.
You know, and it is those boundaries, that is the glue that holds the coaching paradigm together, right? The boundary between you and just letting the client find their own answers, you know, asking the probing questions and not providing in the insights, only unless, like you said, where you've introduced that. So, I mean, that boundary really is a huge core component to the coaching relationship, so that the person can move forward and they can take ownership in the things that they do and achieve and learn, and the insights that they make are their insights, not our insights, but their insights. You know what I mean? And so showing that boundary and taking a step back allows them to really claim their victories and claim their gains, because
and their decisions,
right.
And you know, I was thinking too, as you were talking, Bruce, is like some people are trained as coaches, and maybe they don't have a background in the business sector or experience or a license as a counselor or a therapist. But when people are layering skill sets, you know, layering the coaching into already they have a practice or experience base, it's like your client's coming to you for coaching, but they know you have this expertise. They know you have this business know-how. They know, like for me, they know I'm a nutritionist. You know, they're sometimes going to, those questions are going to come up. And they're there, and you're there to help them. But it still is stepping out of the coaching position. And I think asking permission and acknowledging that is always important, because I think then the lines don't get so blurry. You know what I mean? The client becomes clear about what coaching is and isn't, as long as you're separating it.
Exactly. Good points. Well, we're just about toward the end. So, man, that was a great discussion on, you know, boundaries. And again, we get to share some more of our coaching techniques and expertise with our listeners. So folks, don't hesitate to come to our Facebook page at facebook.com/ Concierge Coaches Show. I can be reached at www.conciergecoach.net, and also on my Twitter at Cameron Coaches. So don't hesitate to see me there. And Cindy, what's your contact info?
I can be reached on my website at wisdomfoods.com, And I also can be reached by phone personally at 714-943-6206. If any of our listeners need some support, referrals, or just questions about coaching or anything that came up on the show today, Bruce and I are certainly available. And once again, Bruce, it's really fun to hash through some of these topics with you. Always, always interesting.
Yeah, always good and informative. And I think it's good that listeners can kind of peek behind the veil and hear what we're thinking and doing and either become attracted to the coaching profession itself or fortify what they're already doing if they're a coach, etc. So with all that, have a great week and a Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
From the Concierge Coaches Show. We'll see you next week here on LA Talk Radio. Same time. Take care, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Cindy DeFerdinand, only on LA Talk Radio.